number one sports site in the world.
Live from the Quicken Loans studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. You know what they say.
You know what they say. See a broad to get that booty act. Lay it down. Smack on the ankle.
It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
We die, we die together.
And YahooSportsRadio.com.
Tony D with you.
Getting interactive, recapping everything that's going down.
And giving you your first chance to react. Nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Yahoo Sports Radio
is now.
Oh, got to be.
This is what we do.
From the Quicken Loans Studios, here's Tony D.
Well, what do you know? That didn't take very long for the Denver Broncos and Gary Kubiak to go, yeah, you know what? Peyton Manning's going to be our guy. I kind of thought that they would push it as far as they could. You know, around the building they could know. In their offices they could know. But right away, yep, Peyton Manning's going to be our quarterback. And let's be honest here. It's the right call if Peyton Manning is healthy. If he's got a foot issue, if he's got a lingering hip problem that nobody wants to talk about, if there's something wrong with his shoulder, if there's something wrong with his chest, if there's something wrong with his knee, if there's something wrong with his toe, pinky, thumb, I don't care. If there's anything wrong with him, then this isn't the right move. But if he's healthy, if he's ready to go, if he has been healed from what has ailed him in the past, then the Broncos are making the right choice. I found this thing to be very, very confusing. I thought it was the most bizarre quarterback transition I'd seen in a while, given the nature of Manning's career and how it looked like it was going to end. How quickly people embraced an unknown over a Hall of Famer, and how quickly they embraced the Hall of Famer back. And this is where the Broncos are. Here's a couple of things about this, though, and let's think about this for a second. How dangerous really are the Broncos at the quarterback position? Would you say that they're in good shape with Peyton Manning? Just the quarterback position. I wouldn't. And I wouldn't say it with Brock Osweiler either. So now the question becomes this. How are the Broncos strong? Well, obviously defensively. They're one of the best defenses in the NFL. So do they need Peyton Manning to be 2013 Peyton Manning? Do they need Peyton Manning to be kind of what we've seen him do before? No, they don't. Not at all. As a matter of fact, they need Peyton Manning to be more of a game manager. Oh, I don't want to say that. Oh, the nasty word. Nobody likes that. But they don't need him to be gunslinging Manning. They need him to be hand the ball off, manage the game, don't turn the ball over, stay on the field a while. That Peyton Manning. This defense can take care of the rest. They don't need to score 35 points a game. They won't have to. They have to run the football. The Denver Broncos have to run the football. When they rush for over 125 yards a game, they are 7-0. Run, run, run. So the argument about who is the better quarterback should not be about who gives them the best chance to throw the tight spiral through the air into tight coverage. No. They'll get that from either guy, although Manning's will come with less velocity. What they need is a guy that won't turn the ball over, that won't get crazy, will move the ball effectively down the field, but they will do it running the football. There's a lot of things not to like about this Denver offense. They are inconsistent. They don't score in large stretches. They do have a tendency to turn the ball over, and their offensive line is garbage. And when you think about what they could be facing in this playoffs against great, really good pass rushing teams, like, let's say, Kansas City, let's say Houston, let's say Cincinnati, these are teams that could be on the radar on their way to a Super Bowl. That offensive line is going to be tested. Manning does a better job of getting rid of the ball under that kind of pressure than Brock Osweiler. And when you have a young quarterback that doesn't understand how to get rid of the football, bad things can happen. You get hit, you drop it, you throw bad interceptions, you get sloppy, you get a little bit too nervous, and Manning will not do that. He has a better chance of not screwing this up than Osweiler. And I know he's a Hall of Famer, and I just gave him that kind of label. But let's be honest, that's where we are. Mark Kisla of the Denver Post equated Peyton Manning's performance this upcoming playoffs to that of Trent Dilfer of the Baltimore Ravens in 2000. Don't get crazy. Don't get stupid. Don't do anything spectacular. We don't need you to do anything spectacular. That's a little bit strong, but I kind of like where that's going. But no matter who is under center, the Broncos will have a deficiency at that position against the better quarterbacks during this run. Whether it is Tom Brady, whether it is Ben Roethlisberger, whether it's Alex Smith, whether it's Andy Dalton, if he should come back, if they make it to the Super Bowl, they'll be the underdog in that position, whether it's Carson Palmer, whether it's Cam Newton, whether, heck, it's even Aaron Rodgers and all the problems that the Green Bay Packers have. And of course, Russell Wilson. The Broncos will have the lesser of the quarterback in those scenarios, and it shouldn't matter. They do not need the Peyton Manning of 2 years ago. They just need a guy who will run the ball and not turn it over, because the offensive line stinks and Manning gives them the best chance to win. So good job, Gary Kubiak. This is something you'll get second guessed on, of course, if you lose the game. If Manning throws that late pick that where he just couldn't quite keep it together, then the Broncos will second-guess this. The fan base will second-guess this. That's coming with the territory. But this is the right choice. Smart Bronco fans will realize this is the right choice. 800-777-2907. 800-777-2907. Are the Broncos making the right choice? Do you like Osweiler in that situation? And how of a strong number one seed are the Broncos in your mind as we head into the playoffs? Lovie Smith got fired. It looks like Dirk Cutter is the guy. Why are NFL teams, including the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, so impatient? We'll explore that next. It is Tony D here on the Nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio. You can hit us up on Twitter, and I'd love you to do so, at Tony D Radio. Also, check out our Facebook page, Tony D Radio Show. You can comment. You can make predictions. We already had David making predictions on the NFL playoffs. You can say we're stupid. You can say we're great. I don't care. You can go to our Facebook page, Tony D Radio Show. So many ways to contact us on the program tonight, but coming up next, why in the world are coaches getting fired so quickly in the NFL? That's next. Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Mike Kliss in Denver is tweeting out that Brock Osweiler has an MCL strain in his right knee. Now, I know Osweiler was upset that he wasn't going to get the start in the playoffs, but I don't know how much this injury is affecting that or whatnot, but nevertheless, Peyton Manning is the starting quarterback for the Broncos, no matter who they play, coming up next weekend. But we got four games coming up this weekend. Houston taking on Kansas City, Pittsburgh against Cincinnati, the Seattle Seahawks and the Minnesota Vikings, and Green Bay at Washington. All coming up this weekend. We'll be breaking that down with John McMullen coming up in hour two tonight on the show. Pete Futak of collegefootballnews.com will come up at the bottom of the hour in 16 minutes, give us his insight into Alabama-Clemson. If I hear one more Dabo Sweeney, nobody believed in us, quote, I'm going to lose my mind. Will somebody please tell that man that he's the number one team in the country, at least according to the polls?
And he's been the number one team for weeks.
I know. Will he stop? Shut up, Dabo. Shut up. I'm sick and tired of this. And it's not because he's a Clemson guy. Don't believe. I hate this. I hate when coaches do this. Because here's why. Okay. Because they're hypocrites. They're all hypocrites, right? When you get a coach and you say, coach, many people are saying that your team lacks the defensive consistency in order to, you know what they always say? Well, we don't care what people say. That's you guys in the media, and you guys just make your own stupid assessments, and we just think you're all idiots, and we don't pay attention to anything y'all say anyway. And then when some media guy goes, yeah, you know what? I kind of like Alabama in this one. You get, oh, nobody gives us a chance. You guys in the media never give us a chance. Like, it's hypocritical.
That's a very good point, yeah.
You either care what people think or you don't care what people think. I don't understand. This whole thing, like, I get to pick and choose what to like or what to not like or what to take and what to ignore of what you say is insanity. I mean, I hear this all the time from coaches, and it makes me, what in the world do you care if media members are picking your opponent? You have a job to do. Go out and do the job. If you prove everybody wrong, you prove everybody wrong. If you're looking for bulletin board material for the national championship football game, shame on you. If you can't get your team motivated to play in the national championship, and you need to throw the nobody's giving us respect card, even though that's a bunch of bull, because all season long people have been telling people how good Clemson is. You didn't barely get into the tournament. You were the number one team in the nation, and you were voted that way by coaches, media members, everybody, including the committee. It didn't matter if it was the AP. It didn't matter if it was the committee. It didn't matter if it was the coaches. Take whatever poll you want. Clemson was on top. So stop with this nonsense that nobody believed in you. Stop it, because you're lying.
My biggest, what I had the most problem with was that right after the game against Oklahoma, that's all he talked about. He didn't talk about how good Deshaun Watson played. He didn't talk about Wayne Gallman. He didn't talk about any of those guys or the defense. He just concentrated on people not believing in him, and it took away from his players who won him the damn game.
It is legitimate whining, and he needs to stop, because again, stop caring what people think about you. Good Lord. Stop it. You know, the successful people in this country couldn't give two rips what people think about them. And that's in radio, TV, coaching, whatever. The successful people don't care. Right? Look at the late Steve Jobs. Do you think he whined that people didn't believe in him? Or he just went out and made a better product and just went out and sold it. You think Kobe Bryant cares what people think about him? Lord, no. Stop whining. I don't know how I don't know how Alabama loses this game, but nevertheless,
hey, here I am. You don't believe in him.
Now I don't believe in him. But I actually think it's going to be a good game. I do.
I
know.
Hope so. Especially after those two semifinal games. So it better be a good one.
Pete Futek has written about this. I think he really loves Alabama in this game. We'll get his thoughts on that coming up. All right. So Lovie Smith was fired yesterday in a surprising move by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And as we thought yesterday, that Tampa Bay was going to have its guy, or at least mindset of their guy. And it turns out that they really do like offensive coordinator Dirk Koetter, and looks to make him the lead candidate for the job, trying to keep him from going somewhere else. Does it work? Well, here's the thing. I think this is kind of weak, because what they're basically doing is they want to pretend that this was lack of progress, when in reality, it's they want a better guy. That's fine, but it's weak to sort of imply that Lovie Smith lost this job. No, Dirk Koetter gained, if that's the guy you want, if these reports are true, then Dirk Koetter gained the job through circumstance. Meaning the Buccaneers saw what he did with Jameis Winston. Because remember, the Buccaneers had Jeff Tedford. Remember when they had Jeff Tedford as offensive coordinator, and then he got sick? And so they didn't have him for a majority of the season last year. They say that was one of the reasons why the Buccaneers went 2-14, was just no offensive continuity. Fine, use that excuse, whatever. But they bring in Dirk Koetter for this year. He does a great job with Jameis Winston's first year. Great job. Winston had a very good year. Threw for over 4,000 yards, had more touchdowns than interceptions. Sure, he made mistakes, but he had very good games. He had not so good games. He had a typical good rookie season. And the Buccaneers liked that so much and want him to stay in that position, meaning they want to pair him up with Jameis Winston and keep that going, that they're willing to say, hey, you know what, Lovie Smith, after 2 years, we need you out. We're going to make this guy the head coach so he can stay in a relationship with Jameis Winston. Here's the problem. Is anybody getting to Dirk Cutter and finding out if that's exactly the job he wants? Is that the job he wants? Because I'll tell you this. If I was Dirk Cutter, here's the way I would see the Buccaneers. You brought in Raheem Moore and told everybody how awesome he was, and then you fired him quick. You brought in Greg Schiano and told everybody how awesome he was, and then you fired him real quick. You brought in Lovie Smith because you wanted a veteran coach of this team. After 2 years, you fired him quick. Now I'm the cat's meow. Now I'm the one that's on the shelf. Now I'm the one you're saying that needs to be guiding this team. How long before you turn your back on me and kick me out to the curb? Do I have 8 minutes to turn this around? Do I have to put this team in the playoffs immediately? Do I have to take over a team that may be messed up in a couple of areas and I have to turn it around quickly? What kind of support are you going to give me? No, there might be better alternatives out there. What if the Giants like me? The Giants have a history of keeping guys around for a while, let them grow. They don't overreact. They don't freak out. They give you a couple of years. What if that job is appealing? What if the Miami Dolphins job is more appealing? What if I want to coach a team that has playoff potential immediately? What if the Eagles job is more appealing? So has anybody asked Dirk Cutter if this is the job he wants?
I would laugh if he's like, I'm going to go to Miami.
Right.
Just down the road.
I would too.
Go to Miami.
I would too. Because when the Tampa Bay Buccaneers had their press conference on Wednesday and they said, well, it was, you know, lack of progress, nobody really believed it. Look, you gave the guy 2 years, and sure, he went 2-14, but by giving him year two, you weren't saying, look, you have the second year to get, you were like, okay, we got a rookie quarterback. We now know where we're at. We shouldn't be anywhere near the playoffs in year two. You have a rookie quarterback. What NFL team believes a rookie quarterback is capable of coming in right away and guiding his team to the playoffs? Maybe Andrew Luck? That's about it. That is a very, very, very rare characteristic for a rookie quarterback. Most rookie quarterbacks go 3-13, for crying out loud. Most rookie quarterbacks struggle and yet show progress, and that's exactly what Jameis Winston did. So when they say lack of progress, baloney, there was progress. The team went 6-10, at one point was 6-6, and your rookie quarterback was playing pretty well for a rookie. So don't give us this lack of progress. No, you needed to get rid of a guy to gain a guy, and you may not get the guy. That's the cool thing about this awkward scenario for Tampa Bay. You think Lovie was like, good, I'm glad. They say he was fired by phone because he didn't want that meeting. Good, right. good. And why should he go into the office to get fired? Just be like, what do you want?
And the GM,
well, come on in.
He generally sounded like he felt bad, the GM, today during his presser.
Yeah. I remember hearing a story of wrestling announcer Jim Ross having to fly all the way to Connecticut to go to the WWE office to get fired. I'm thinking there's an easier way to do that than a plane flight.
Yes.
And Lovie Smith was like, save me the trip. You're fired. Good. Click. Tony D, Yahoo Sports Radio, Pete Futek next.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
It's Tony D here on Yahoo Sports Radio. Hey, thanks for joining us. All right, looking ahead to Monday, the College Football National Championship. It's Alabama and Clemson, teams that were in the top of the polls pretty much all year. Pete Futek joins us from collegefootballnews.com to help us break down this game and what we're going to see Monday. How are you, Pete?
I'm fine. How's it going?
Good. All right. So as I said earlier, these are teams that have been on the top of the polls for a while. How evenly matched are they?
Well, I don't know how Clemson's going to score. I'm sure they will. I'm sure they're going to do just fine. I don't see how this works. They're very good, obviously. They're 14-0. There's nothing cheap about that. Beating Oklahoma like they did is tremendous. But, you know, this is not a team that seems to match up well at all with Alabama if Alabama plays focused and at its highest level. So if it plays like it did against Michigan State, forget about it, because I just don't see how Clemson does this. I'm hoping I'm wrong. I'm hoping it's a great game. I'm actually rooting, you know, in a way for Clemson. I'd like seeing new blood and new teams win and fan bases who haven't been there for a while get to have the fun of that. I just don't see how it's going to happen.
Do you buy into the conversation that people are having about, hey, well, it's Alabama against athletic quarterbacks, and they struggle against those type of players?
Well, they struggle against Johnny Manziel. I mean, but that's really kind of it. I mean, Nick Marshall did all right against Alabama, but again, different team. I mean, they've stop Dak Prescott from running wild. They didn't get run on by any quarterbacks this year. You know, so this defense is just better. I mean, the one from about 5 years ago is a little bit better against the run, but this one's the best pass rushing defense in the Nick Saban era, and by far it's his best front three. Also, I mean, it's, you know, as good as the Alabama run defense has been over the last several years, it's been a while since they've had an absolute NFL killer up front. Marcel Darius has been the one from that front three. They've had some good linebackers, but on the line, this one's just better. A'shaun Robinson, Jaron Reed, this whole group is full of NFL starters, and it's just better. And the problem for Clemson is they're going to have to throw, because what works for them is everything kind of sets up around the run and the threat of that running game between Wayne Gallman and Deshaun Watson, and that's not going to fly against this Alabama front seven.
What about Alabama? Do they have to throw against Clemson?
They just have to kind of do what they do. Just, you know, don't make a lot of mistakes. That's, I think, the one big key here is just don't turn the ball over. Clemson has not been great in turnover margin all year, but it has been really strong at turnover margin in the biggest of games. Overall, I believe they're a minus one on the year, but I think there's something like a plus eight in, like, you know, Notre Dame, Florida State, Oklahoma, and North Carolina. The biggest games, they've tend to show up and just really be focused and rock. So if you're Alabama, I might be wrong on this. Clemson might be a whole bunch better than I'm giving them credit for, but I don't see any way that Clemson wins this game unless they're at least a plus three in turnover margin. So as long as you're Alabama, don't screw it up.
Pete Futek joins us, collegefootballnews.com, on the national championship game between Clemson and Alabama. Pete, you cover this sport pretty well. You know some history. You kind of see things in a larger picture. Did you see this coming from Clemson, this kind of national championship run?
Not in any way, shape, or form. Mainly because, you know, they lost just about everyone from that defensive front. I mean, you know, the concern coming into the season was, remember, Deshaun Watson wasn't able to stay healthy. So it's like, all right, you have a quarterback that gets banged up. You have an entire, you know, new defensive front that has to be replaced. Lots of different parts have to be change out. You know, they have to play Notre Dame, have to play Florida State, have to play Miami. And, you know, it just kind of looked like a team that, all right, it's going to be really good, but it's probably going to top out about 10-2, and then they'll probably lose to Florida State again. But seeing this, not a chance. But, you know, here's the thing. I'm not dogging them because they did it. I mean, they got here. If it's so easy, everyone would go 14-0. But if you look at their schedule, the teams that they played went bowling are 2-5 this bowl season. The two teams that won are Appalachian State and Louisville, who played that quarterbackless Texas A&M team. But, you know, Florida State got tagged. North Carolina got run over. You know, Notre Dame lost Ohio State. And meanwhile, most of the teams that Alabama played, you know, who went in this bowl season, sort of rocked. The SEC has been amazing this bowl season, and Alabama's been by far the best team in the SEC this year. So it's all there. I mean, I'm hoping I'm wrong, but I think that 7-point spread is, I thought it was a joke when I first saw it. I don't know how this stays within 7 points.
In terms of Alabama's defense, it's always been good. Nick Saban turns out a good defense all the time. But in this one, in terms of their pass rush, how good is this version compared to years that won?
By far the best. By far. And it was always the thing about the Nick Saban defenses were that they just didn't rush the passer because they didn't have to. They just sort of, you know, they got some pressure up there, but their secondaries were always so strong and they were so good against the run that 3-4 just didn't really sell out to get to the into the backfield. And this one doesn't even do anything that quirky. They just kind of do it from all angles and just get all sorts of pressure into the backfield from all sides, and it helps that they've got an athletic front three that does get to the quarterback more than most of the past Nick Saban front three. So it's just a dominant line, and you know, it's crazy. Outside, again, by the numbers, this is not his best run defense, but outside of one big garbage time Nick Chubb run, that's been it. No one else has run on them. I mean, you look at all these great teams. I mean, you know, when they want to stop somebody, they've done it. It's where seasons have gone to die with this team, with, you know, Leonard Fournette and his Heisman campaign. You know, Dak Prescott was starting to, you know, get a little momentum for his Heisman. You know, and you saw just team after team have to play Alabama, and all of a sudden, you know, season changes, season over for these teams when they just go up against them and get rocked. So Michigan State, I really thought that was going to be close. I thought Michigan State had the right makeup, had the right experience, had the right coaching staff, had the right NFL quarterback. I thought everything was going to be there. I thought Alabama would win, but I thought it would be a real dogfight, and obviously that was just a complete domination. If they can have that sort of focus on both sides of the ball, I'm hoping that, you know, Clemson comes up with something strong.
I don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but if Nick Saban does win, that's 4 in 7 years. What does that mean in this the state of college football as we have it now?
Well, it means he's up there with the gods already. Now it's, you know, you can legitimately start thinking about and considering the era, you know, the best of all time. I mean, longevity, no, he's not Bear Bryant or Bobby Bowden or even Joe Paterno in terms of, you know, being just around for, million years, you know, but for what he's been able to do in this day and age, in this era, it's amazing. I mean, with all the restrictions, the concern he's played in the by far best conference in the country over the last 10 years, and what he's been able to do with this program, it's just been amazing. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see how he takes this if they win, especially if they win in a walk, because next year they've got to do some rebuilding. I mean, it's Alabama, so they, you know, they just reload with more NFL stars, but they lose just about everyone. It's, you know, they'll still be in everyone's preseason top 10 because it's Alabama, but if you're Nick Saban and you're getting up there in age and you're in your mid-60s and you're thinking at any time, am I going to want to go to the NFL? If you win now, this is going to be the time to do it because, you know, he's going to have to do a gut job and he's not going to get in the national championship picture again for at least another 2 years.
As far as Deshaun Watson and being a dual threat quarterback, if Alabama takes one of those threats away, is the other threat worthy of making this game interesting?
Deshaun Watson is going to have to be 2006 Vince Young against USC. He's going to have to come up with a transcendent performance that just says, you know, I'm going to be the best player on the field and I'm going to be what the signature star of this game, because he's going to have to take over. He is a slippery, deceptive runner. He's very smart with the ball. He knows how to take off at the right time. He's one of those guys who doesn't make it look all that hard, and all of a sudden, 2 steps later, he's 15 yards down the field. He's just very, very smart and efficient with how he plays. And the one concern is that the two biggest games of the season, you know, the ACC championship was big, obviously, but really the two biggest games were obviously the Orange Bowl against Oklahoma and Notre Dame, and those were his two worst passing games of the season, where he just couldn't seem to find the mark against Notre Dame, and he struggled against Oklahoma a little bit with his passing game, but he made up for it with the ground game and the running attack. He's not going to be able to run against this Alabama defensive front. And that's going to be kind of the storyline. It'll be interesting to see. You know, I can't wait to get down there and hear how Alabama talks about this. But early on, you know, the main storyline once this matchup came in was, you know, like you mentioned, oh, what are they going to do against mobile quarterbacks? Well, all of a sudden, there it is, gauntlet, you know, down. This is a team that once you challenge them, tends to focus pretty well on that and tends to say, okay, we're going to stop that. So I think that he's going to have to be a great passer, and because he's not going to be able to run all that well.
Pete Futek again, College Football News. Pete, one more thing. You're an opinionated guy. I want your thoughts on New Year's Eve. Can college football ever own that night?
If the matchups are better, and here's the problem, is that they fell off the map. Yes, the New Year's Eve thing was weird and doesn't make any sense, but it also fell off the map also because, remember, the first year is just a perfect storm because you had the Rose Bowl, which is the perfect time slot, followed up by the Sugar Bowl, another perfect time slot in the first year. You had Heisman versus Heisman, Marcus Mariota versus Jameis Winston, so the star power was there, and it was the Rose Bowl, and then, you know, you had the Sugar Bowl with Alabama and Ohio State, the two biggest bad boys on the block, plus, you know, you have the two evil empires, Nick Saban versus Urban Meyer, the novelty of it, everything was in place for it to absolutely blow up and succeed the first year. It wouldn't have really it would have mattered if the games were on like January 2nd when it would have been perfect, I thought, because then, you know, they would have had the whole day to themselves, but the numbers still would have dropped. You know, you couldn't recreate that first year. But if you do have a matchup of monsters, you know, at some point, yeah, people are going to find their way to watch it if they really care. But honestly, Clemson in Oklahoma, you know, to me, again, I was geeked out about it, but to the average sports fan, nah, it just doesn't really work because nobody really watched Clemson over the last, you know, second half of the season. And, you know, Michigan State versus Alabama, okay, that was pretty good. But by that time, you know, Michigan State, you know, didn't look all that great to start, and the numbers just weren't there.
Pete Futek, great stuff as always. Thank you, my friend. Appreciate
Anytime.
It.
Have a good one.
You got it. Pete Futek, collegefootballnews.com. Check him out there. And he writes very, very good stuff. Him and his crew over there really break down college football better than anybody out there. It's one of the best sites out there. 800-777-2907. Again, also follow us on Twitter at Tony D Radio. You can ask us anything there or are on Facebook, Tony D Radio Show. Coming up, the NFL playoffs. What you can expect from the four games. I'll give it a little insight next on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
This guy's on. Back to the Quicken Loans Studios. And back to Tony D.
So thanks to Pete Futek on his thoughts. I had a feeling it would be. I think Alabama's going to roll. I don't know. I think it's going to be closer. I don't know. But then again, I thought it was going to be close with Notre Dame, Alabama, too. I remember Pat Forte and I were doing a segment on this very network, and we both were saying, hey, look, Notre Dame, and if they do this, this, and this. And then we got to the game, and Alabama just blew them out of the water. But there was a lot of media members that day who, you know, was like, uh-oh, okay, that was wrong. But this, I don't know. I like the way Clemson plays with Deshaun Watson. I think they've got a good chance. They've got a good chance. And again, I said this before, and I'll keep saying it. If Clemson does win this game, then you watch how the SEC fans are going to have to sort of circle the wagons on defending their conference. It's got to be so hard when you've set the it up as we're the best, better than the rest, and no one's even close. And that's the way the SEC was for a number of years. And when other teams started playing better and the other teams started knocking them off, you know, you're gonna have to rally around this. You know what this reminds me of? You remember the Dream Team of 1992? Remember that in the Olympics? A lot of people don't know this, but the United States voted against having professionals in the Olympics that year. They voted against it. And the reason was that they told the world, you don't really want this. You don't want us to do this. If we do this, we're gonna be killed. And the world said, no, bring it on. Eventually, we'll beat you. Eventually, you won't be the best in the world. If we need a starting point, you know. And that eventually did happen. And now the U.S. is kind of back on top in Olympic basketball. But there was a dark time for the sport. There was a time where they weren't in Greece. They barely won the bronze. And that's the kind of the way I see the rest of college football. Look, the SEC was just beating up the rest of the country, and they were winning national championship games. People don't remember how good those Ohio State teams were that went and played LSU and Florida for the national title and got throttled by both of those teams. Throttled by both those teams. And outside of USC, before the SEC run of seven national championships, there was no competition. I mean, it was just the SEC would go to the national championship game and win and win rather easily. Whether it was Florida or whether it was Alabama or whether it was Auburn. I mean, Auburn's game was close against Oregon, but it was a complete dominance. But I mean, I don't know if the rest of the world, rest of the college football world, caught up to the SEC, or just eventually these kind of things go in that kind of way, where you just aren't on top of it all the time, and there's flaws that get exposed, and sometimes you run out of luck, and next thing you know, you're not as dominant as you were. But just pay attention if Clemson wins on Monday night, what kind of narrative is going to come from the SEC, at least media supporters, who have been touting this conference year in and year out. No one's even close. Saint Nick Saban is the best. You know, all of that kind of stuff. You know who we're talking about. Because Clemson, as Pete Futek says, I think a lot of people did not see this coming from Clemson. A good team, but not a great team. A team that, you know, had some success, had some good players, but didn't look like they were next step ready. And they became next step ready. But push comes to shove, if I had a choice, I would take Alabama in this game. I think when Saban has a chance to win a title, he takes it. He takes it. 800-777-2907. We also talked tonight about the Denver Broncos naming Peyton Manning as the starting quarterback. Brock Osweiler does have a sprained MCL on his knee. Seriousness of that is not yet known, by at least me anyway. Mike Kliss in Denver, News 9, tweeting that out tonight. Is that the main reason? It could be, but I think Gary Kubiak goes with Peyton Manning anyway. I don't think there's any real reason not to. But this AFC, this is going to be a blast to watch. If you're just in for the ride and you don't have any dog in the fight, it is as wide open as I've ever seen the playoffs. I mean, seriously. The Steelers do not need a miraculous run to win as a six seed. The Steelers don't need to be, well, you know, just go through the juggernauts of the conference. They're just as good as anybody else because every team in the AFC is flawed. If you woke up and saw Houston in the Super Bowl, I don't think you'd be all that shocked. It's hard, but you wouldn't be all that shocked. I mean, every team has got an issue. Quarterback controversy, right? Before Manning was named, quarterback controversy, injured team like the Patriots, A.J. McCarron, a quarterback for the Bengals, Houston, still a 9-7 squad, even though they beat up on some lower competition to close out the year. Kansas City's won 10 straight, but some people don't quite know yet. So, I mean, it's going to be an interesting playoffs. I don't know what to do. I'm going to talk to John McMullen about this in hour two. I have no idea what to make of that Green Bay-Washington game. I really don't. I got my opinions on Steelers-Bengals, you know, and I got my opinion on Kansas City-Houston. But when I look at the Bengals, when I look at the Packers-Redskins, A, I'm not sure how good the Redskins really are. Stop telling me that they could go to the Super Bowl. Stop. You know when you can tell me they can go to the Super Bowl? When they go to the Super Bowl. Until then, calm down. This is still a 9-7 team. Stop pretending like they're world beaters now. They found a magical formula. They might be good, they might be better, but come on. When they go to the Super Bowl, you can slap me around a little bit and tell me I should have been paying attention this whole time. But the Packers' problems are real. That's a bad football team. That's a 10-6 football team that's bad. They got a lot of problems. So what do I believe coming out of that game? I don't know yet. At Tony D Radio on Twitter, Steven, are you saying, are you guys going to review your preseason NFL prognostications? I remember some of those thinking there's no way. I kind of need to know what you mean by thinking there's no way. For Cincinnati? Yeah. Cincinnati was my, if you remember, we have to go all the way back to beginning of the season. Remember, I said Cincinnati was going to be the biggest disappointment. Remember that?
Right.
I said, of all the playoff teams from last year, your biggest disappointment in 2015 will be Cincinnati. Okay. I was wrong. Sorry.
You don't even want to know what my Super Bowl was.
Oh, I've got them all down. Oh, yeah. And when are we got to gather everybody together sometime. Yeah. I don't know. Should we do it after the season? Or because we did make Super Bowl picks.
Yeah,
or should
I think we should wait till after the Super Bowl.
Okay. After the Super Bowl?
And we'll review it all. And
I got it all. Steven, pay attention in a couple of weeks.
Here, I'll just tell you this. My Super Bowl was the Philadelphia Eagles and the Indianapolis Colts.
I had the Steelers, but who did I have? I think I had the Steelers and the Packers.
I know I had the Rams in the playoffs, the Dolphins.
Oh, yeah. I had Buffalo.
Oh.
I had San Diego winning the division. I had the Denver Broncos not making the playoffs.
Yeah, I don't think I had Arizona making the playoffs. I had Seattle and St. Louis.
Why do I even bother?
I was talking to the guys the other day about this. I'm like, I don't even want to do it next year.
Oh, my God.
This one just hurt my feelings too much.
The Super Bowl picks. He says the Super Bowl picks plus the Bengals thing is what I meant. No way. Yeah, you're right, Steven. No way.
Yeah.
I did not give. Steven is 100% correct on Twitter.
I gave the Bengals a chance.
I don't think any of us picked them. I don't think any of us picked them to win the division. I think it was Baltimore and Steelers.
Yes. Yep.
I think all of us picked them. And I said they wouldn't even make the playoffs. Good stuff. That was a lot of fun.